Heather.
And I'm Brittany.
We are the okayest moms, but we're also creatives, businesswomen, and best friends.
This podcast was created as a community for the modern mom.
We know you're doing your best despite the conflicting messages that you aren't doing it as well as someone else.
We believe in self-care, mom friends as our sanity, and that motherhood looks different for everyone.
Most of all, we believe that you are more than just mom.
So join us as we talk about a range of topics from motherhood to frivolous reality TV and everything in between.
Welcome to the Okayest Moms Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Okayest Moms, the podcast. Heather here, along with Brittany.
Hey.
So we are so excited for our guest today. As you guys know, Brittany has two boys. I have a boy myself, and we are talking all about boys today. So it's like a flashback to middle school. We're going a little boy crazy today. We have Janet Allison with us today, and she is the co-host of On Boys, the podcast, and the voice behind Boys Alive. She has over 20 years experience in coaching and mentoring and has been featured on radio and TV. And we're going to be talking about boys and their big emotions, which is kind of funny because I typically think of, you know, before having children, I always thought of girls having the big emotions. And was I in for an awakening?
I feel like I was kind of prepared to have boys with my three brothers. I kind of knew how this was going to go. But I mean, they're also different, but
that is the truth. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with Janet Allison.
Okay, well, let's just dive right in. Hi, Janet. How are you?
I'm so happy to be here. This is really exciting. It's going to be a fun conversation.
For sure. Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about what you do?
Absolutely. The first thing I always have to say is that I raised daughters. I did not raise sons. My daughters are grown and gone out in the world, but I was a teacher back in the mid 90s, and I had a class full of boys, and I had my elementary ed degree. I was, you know, a non-traditionally aged teacher. I was a little older, and I thought, I can handle this. No big deal. And I couldn't. I didn't know what I had gotten myself into. Those boys were, this was first grade, so active. They didn't love what I was teaching them. I thought they would be, you know, of course, just amazed and in awe, and they were not. And all they really wanted to do was be outside and play. And so I had to get really wise, really fast. And at that time, you know, the conversation was mostly about girls. We were not talking about boys in education at all, because it was equity in sports for girls and all of those things. So the conversation around boys was very limited. And one of my go-to people at that time, and he still is Steve Biddulph. And he wrote the classic book, Raising Boys. And that was my go-to manual at that point. So I started to learn about boy development, boys' brains, the way boys approach the world. And you know this because you have boys in your house. And this is for boys and men. It's not just, you know, because you have an eight-year-old. This is men too. They approach the world differently than we typically do as females. Now, I want to, you know, acknowledge non-binary and all the variations. And as your listeners are hearing this, they may feel like, oh, this is more like my daughter than my son. So I really think about this work that I've been doing for the past 20 years as helping us understand an other. Someone who isn't us, whatever we are, whatever our style is of communicating. And in all of that, I did a bunch of communication skills training, and I've been a family coach, and I work with teachers. And my goal is to explore and explain boy behavior so that we can stop having unrealistic expectations of our boys, which is why boys have so much trouble in school. You know, the last year has been incredibly hard on our boys. And when we can understand how they approach the world, we can relax as mamas a little bit more. And we can, you know, kind of give it over, like, you know, like you have to give over your couch, because if you have boys, you likely do, and you'll get a new one when they go off to college. But, you know, you kind of just have to be like, oh, this is how it's going to roll. Okay, I'm going to quit fighting it.
That's so funny that you mentioned the couch, because I was literally just talking to my neighbor yesterday, and we had gone over to their house for a play date, and we haven't, that was really our first like inside play date outside of our tight little bubble we've been keeping. And of course, I feel like all of our social skills are just in the gutter. They're terrible right now. And my kids, the first thing they did, ran full speed and dove on their couch. And I started apologizing. And she has two boys herself. And she said, "Are you kidding? I gave that up years ago." And I had just recently got a new couch, and I thought I was going to put my foot down and say, "Not on this one. Not that was the old one. This is the new one." And I quickly give it up, because it's just, there's no point.
Yeah. There's no point. You only drive yourself crazy.
Yep, you're just talking to the wind.
Yeah. Right.
So what are some of the ways that you typically see boys express emotions? Is it outright? Is it more, can it be more subconscious and subverted? Of course, we all know that, as you mentioned, boys are all unique and we each have our own personality, but are there any like main ways?
So what we know about boys, and if you live with a boy, you know this, is that they are very physical. And physical, if you think about everything physical coming first for boys, if they, you know, are happy, it's going to come out in their bodies. If they're sad, it's going to come out in their bodies. If they're angry, and this is where a lot of parents get really hung up, is when they're angry, they can be very scary. And as they get older, they can, when they are taller than you are, it can be scary when he bangs the table or he slams the door or he puts his fist through the wall. It can be super scary. So that's an emotion that I actually work a lot with parents around, and have done a lot of trainings around anger. And yet, so we have to kind of back up and look at how boys communicate. Boys and men communicate differently than your typical female. For women, you know, all we need to do is just look at each other and make eye contact. And I mean, here we are on Zoom, the three of us just like looking into each other's eyes as much as we can. And we're good. You know, we don't even need coffee. We're good. We can just talk. And our boys are not set up that way. Our boys talking, not so much. Boys want to move. And if you want your boy to talk, your first step is to move with him. So a lot of mamas will say, you know, well, when we go for a drive, he'll talk. When I go for a drive with my husband, he'll talk. And that it covers a couple of bases. One of them is, there's something else going on. It's not like we're just locked and in total conversation. There's distractions. So that's doing something together. And then being okay without making eye contact. We have to kind of get over that as women, because we feel like, well, how many of us have said to our kids, look at me when I'm talking to you, right? Because we think that if they're looking at us, they're hearing us. But I'll tell you what one dad told me. I learned so much from the parents that I work with. He said, you know, I tell my wife, if she wants me to look at her, I can't hear what she's saying. If she wants me to hear what she's saying, I can't look at her. So choose one channel.
So interesting. I have found my first grader has talked a lot more about school and just things when we go on walks. And so we've been doing that more and more. And now that you said husbands too, it's the same for him when he's home and he goes with us. And we have some of the best conversations when we're doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. So getting your boys, getting your men to open up and talk a little bit more, doing something together. It doesn't have to be a walk. It can be washing dishes. It can be playing Legos. It can be crumpling up paper or doodling. Just something that takes the pressure off of, oh my gosh, I have to make eye contact. So side by side, sitting side by side. Typically, we would, you know, be across from someone. We like that as women, but side by side, doing something together helps him to relax, helps him to be able to find his words. So, you know, when he's having big emotions, what do we want most of all is to help him find his words and be able to talk about how he's feeling. Well, he can't do that in the moment. So you are going to have to wait. And for many boys, it can be as much as 7 hours. It can be bedtime when something happened in the morning before he's ready to talk about it. So giving your boys space, allowing them to have some time to move their bodies and process a little bit will help grease the wheels for the conversations. And our boys typically come with a narrower range of being able to describe how they feel. So we really want to help them expand their emotional vocabulary. And it's hard because a lot of boys don't really want to talk about their feelings. So we have to be a little more patient. We have to give it space. So know that you're not going to have a deep, meaningful conversation and talk about how you feel. It might be a sprinkle. It might be two sentences when he's in the bathroom brushing his teeth. And so really taking our expectation away from what this conversation should look like. Does that make sense?
Definitely. I definitely notice the kind of delayed response with my son too. It'll be something that, I thought he was over. And then, like you said, at bedtime, remember earlier today when you got mad at me for this? And it's like, okay, that was a long time ago. And I thought we were okay. And I thought we had talked then and I thought we were through it, but I see we're not. So
yeah, the processing time is a lot longer and being okay with that. Also, the thing that we tend to do as women, we talk a lot and we process out loud. We process, you know, we process our feelings, we process events of the day. We are so quick to connect what happened today with something that happened 3 weeks ago. And we are just like ping pong balls with the words. And typically males process language more slowly. They don't want all the details. They don't want, you know, what the weather was like and what color shirt she was wearing. They don't want the details. So I tell mamas, talk in bullet points. And it feels really weird to just say backpack or lunch. But I will tell you, so I have transformational moms groups, and our moms group was meeting, and we were talking about using fewer words and how, just even how to go about that, and that it's going to be uncomfortable. And this mom was like, okay, well, I'm going to try it. And our meeting was over and it was dinner time, and she walked out. She's got a 10-year-old boy and an 8-year-old boy. And she walked out in the other room and she said, dinner. And her oldest was on the phone with a friend, and he said, oh, I've got to go. It's dinner time. And this mom was absolutely floored. Like, that had never happened before. But it was just that one word. And they can like take that in. Oh, dinner. Okay. But we tend to, you know, put all the fluff and all the layers, and it tends to really overwhelm a lot of boy and men's brains. So really thinking about, am I over talking here?
This is a skill that I have tried to perfect in the past few years because I realized this. And I even, when I know they're tuning out my voice, I use our Alexa that's downstairs and I do an announcement and just like backpack, lunch, shoes, time to go. And they'll listen to her. So the bullet points with Alexa work too.
I love that. I have not heard that yet, Brittany. That's awesome. What a great, what, you know, we got to get pretty clever, right?
They're sick of my voice. So and the other, you're the robot.
That's great. That's great. The other thing to keep in mind too, especially if you have younger children, is that as adults, we talk at about 170 words per minute. Children, all children, only comprehend about 120 words per minute. Crazy when you think about it, right? We are just like fire hoses. And it's so much. So really with your boys, with everybody, just embracing silence, being in companionable silence together. One of my coaching clients has a seventh grader, and of course they're going back to school. He gets in the car, he's got his mask and his hoodie on. So you can imagine there's a little slit of his eyes and that's it. But he gets in the car and what does mom do? How was your day? What, you know, what homework do you have? Blah, 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 blah. And you can tell, I mean, we kind of paused and went, like, his body language is telling you he's done. He needs quiet. So she decided that she would start just letting him get in the car. She had a snack for him after school and just, you know, say this most loving hello and then stop talking.
So hard.
And be in that place. It's so hard. And at first she was, I mean, it was so stressful because she wouldn't talk, but she's thinking the whole time, like, I should be saying something. Why isn't he talking to me? I'm a terrible mother. What's going on here? I can't communicate with my son. But when she could turn off that dialogue in her head and just go, oh, it's so nice to be in this place, in this container of this vehicle with my son and to just be here together. It changed everything. And guess what? When they get home from school, when he's had his snack, he's been telling her stuff about school. So timing, but really thinking about, you know, are we just barraging our kids with so much language? And I got to put this one in here too, because we do this as women a lot, is we ask a lot of questions.
No, that's not me.
You don't do that, Heather. Okay. And the thing is, so we ask a lot of questions, and you know, if we don't get the answer that we want, Heather,
you just reword the question and ask again.
Absolutely. And it's kind of like they're on to us. They actually know what we're doing and they are tuning us out. So be okay with the first answer that you get. Don't just, you know, barrage them with question after question, slightly reworded. You're still angling for the same thing. They know it. And so paying attention to that. It can just ease the tension so much.
I have the same situation when I pick my son up from preschool. And some days he wants to tell me every single thing he did in great detail and who was there and what color shirt they're wearing and what the temperature was and the whole thing. And other days he's just quiet as a mouse. And so I've learned to start saying, do you want to talk right now? And because I find myself with that, like the machine gun questions, and I finally figured out to just say, do you want to talk right now? And he'll often say, no, and just stare out the window. And so, and like you said, yeah, it feels strange. Like we're in here together. We should be conversing and sharing this quiet moment without, you know, when it's just us one-on-one, and that's not what he wants, which is so odd for me because he's such a high energy kid, and it's not like him at all. But I mean, I guess I should just enjoy the quiet when I can get it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you think about how much they've had to process in school and all the social things that they've had to process and the teacher and the transitions and, you know, their friend conversations. They're really quite full by the time they get in the car and it's time to come home. So you're really doing them a favor to just to be in silence together. And it's, and also, you know, when they're just playing and maybe you're folding laundry or you're playing Legos together or whatever you're doing together, try just being in companionable silence. If he initiates conversation, great. But watch and how often you initiate the conversation and just be okay with like, yeah, we're just going to hang out. And it feels really, really good. And your boy actually feels close to you in those moments because he's not having to do all that processing of like, what does she mean? What's she saying? What's my answer supposed to be? It can just feel so much more relaxing.
So here's a scenario that I am dealing with. My first grader wants to tell me every single detail about his day. You know, the same as Nolan, like who he talked to, who he played with, what recess was like, what he did. And my third grader wants it quiet. He doesn't want to talk. He needs time to process, time to regroup after a school day. So as I'm driving home with both of them in the car, it's like a constant back and forth between those two. So then there's no productive conversation or companionable silence, you know? So I just wonder how I can tell the first grader to essentially be quiet until we get home without stifling his, you know, wanting to share about his day.
And he will likely still want to share when he gets home. So that's not going to go away. And I think it's really okay to say, today's going to be a quiet day, quiet ride home today. Do you remember the cone of silence?
No.
I don't know if you're old enough to remember the cone of silence.
What is it?
It was a TV. It was in a TV show called Get Smart. He like had the phone in his shoe. This is really dating me.
I've heard of it.
But they had the cone of silence and it was just like this, you know, it was 60s TV, so it was pretty corny, but I think like this cone came down in the car around the person so that they were in the cone
that's
of silence.
What person needs.
So, you know, maybe you have the cone of silence. Today we're in the cone of silence. And I think too, this is a great opportunity to help your boys see how different people are. You know, some people love to talk, process out loud, tell everybody about their day. Some people want to just have it inside in their mind, or they want to write about it or draw about it or go out and play and process. So it really is an opportunity to go like, we all have different approaches here. And today we're going to, you know, maybe you take turns and trade off. And I am a firm believer in headphones. In noise canceling headphones.
I have thought about that too.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's for you mamas out there listening. It a lot of times, I mean, let's face it, boys are active and boys are noisy. And whether it's talking all the time or just the noise and the grunts and the truck sounds they're making, they're noisy. And it can really throw off your nervous system. If you're a sensitive mom, if you're an anxious person, it can really trigger your like, I can't stand this. It is absolutely okay to put in an earplug, maybe just one, maybe two, you're still going to be able to hear it, or noise canceling headphones, because that's also a visual signal for your boys that, you know what, a mom's getting a little stretched here. She needs to have some quiet. And rather than making them be quiet, it's like, I'm going to take care of myself here. And that's what these noise canceling headphones will do. So, you know, you're fine to play because a lot of times the noise is they're playing and they're fine and they're having fun. And rather than stressing ourselves out to be like chomping it down, oh, I'm just going to put these on. And it's a signal to your boys that, oh, mom's taking care of herself. Wow, what a concept.
It took me far too long to realize how sensitive I was to all of the sound and how that sensory input was just, I blew through all the signs and did not recognize it in myself. And at the end of last year, I actually did buy some noise canceling headphones that they're meant for like a concert. So you can still hear, but you can't, it's not, it just kind of softens right. everything a little bit. And I, right everything. When the time changed and it was dark at 5 o'clock, I'm trying to cook dinner. The kids are no longer able to be in the backyard in the light because it's pitch black outside. And that was the perfect time to put them in because, like you said, they're playing and they're having fun. They're just very loud. And I'm trying to get dinner cooked and, you know, all the other 6 o'clock evening chores. And it was just too much. And I noticed that when my husband got home, I wasn't snapping at him. I was much more pleasant. I was because I was meeting those sensory needs and it made such a difference.
Nice. Yeah. Good for you. Taking care of yourself. And that shows your kids too. You're modeling that for
right.
your kids.
They don't quite care.
How to take care. Well, they'll get there. I mean, they'll get there as adults, you know, they'll see, oh, this is mom taking care of herself.
So let's shift gears a little bit here. So I'm thinking of the boys who are still not explicitly expressing their emotions. Maybe you're still not getting a whole lot out of them when you've tried these different approaches. At what point do you see some things that indicate that there might be something else going on? And maybe what would be some things that could be going on?
Well, I mean, of course, trusting your gut, trusting your intuition. You know your child best. If there's been, you know, things to worry about, he's not talking, or he's been very outgoing and verbal and connected, and now all of a sudden he's not, of course you want to look at, I mean, and we've had big stressors this last year, let's just say. So, but you know, maybe something's happening socially at school that you need to maybe check in with the teacher or the counselor. So the times to worry is if there's been a change, a marked change between, oh, he's been so outgoing and friendly, and now he's closing himself in his room. Those are things to worry about. Understanding the temperament of your boy, of all your kids, you know, some kids, like you said, want to share everything about their day. Other kids are much more private, and that's okay if that's who they are. They might be a kid who just is an observer, who is watchful and is taking everything in, but doesn't necessarily need to share. And I will say that I have my two daughters, I have my younger daughter is so quiet, and so she doesn't need to do all that outward processing. She's totally content to, I mean, I don't even know what she does because it's all on the inside. I don't see it. But, you know, I know that she talks to her sister way more than they're very close. And so, you know, I know she has her people that she talks to, not necessarily me, but that's okay. And she just doesn't have to process out loud as much as her sister does with me. So it's really understanding the different temperaments of your children and being okay with who they are, not trying to make them be someone else. That said, we want to help our boys develop their emotional vocabulary. Absolutely. We want our boys to be empathic and caring. Absolutely. And it's a little longer game than for many girls, because girls come in very attuned to relationships and emotions. And again, with boys, we can go back to everything is physical. And the way that boys develop empathy is they have to experience it. They have to experience both sides of it. we can talk till we're blue in the face and tell them, you know, well, how do you think your brother felt when you hit him over the head with a block? Well, what's going to be really effective is when he gets hit over the head with the block, or he hits his brother with the block and he sees what happened with his brother, and actually experiencing that, watching his brother cry or having the red mark on his brother's forehead. And then I always tell parents, you know, have the little first aid kit so he can run off and get the cream and he can come back and he can do the repair with who he hurt. And that's where empathy grows and develops, is in that repair, in that connection. We could say it, we could talk it, but it's not going to go deeply until he actually experiences, oh, I went a little too far when we were wrestling. I hurt my brother. Now, what do I do? How do I repair this?
I love that. Empathy has been such a big focus this last year for both Brittany and I in both of our homes. And I think our kids have gotten such a dose of empathy lessons this whole year. I feel like the only thing I've been stressing is why we're taking care of everybody else and how our behaviors impact other people around us. And so I think if I've done one thing this past year, it's that.
Yeah. And part of the empathy too is, it sounds like you're doing this, of boys want to be of service. Boys want to be, I think all of our kids want to be needed. They want to be employed. I'll put that in air quotes. They want to have jobs to do. They want to be an important part of the household and be depended upon. We sometimes get really busy and we forget that, oh yeah, we should be letting them do their laundry, set the table, do the dishes. I mean, all the things that take extra time and patience and energy, but especially if you have a child under 7, you are helping them. You are forming habits by imitation. They're watching you. How do you put away the dishes? How do you clean up a spill? They're watching that and learning. And I'll tell you what, it's way easier to teach a 6-year-old how to clean up a spill or do the dishes than it is a 13-year-old. Just saying.
Or a 25-year-old.
That too.
I just have to tell this story about my husband really quick. He never really had to do anything in his household growing up. And when we moved in together, he put dish soap in the dishwasher because it was the first time he had run
dish and dish.
Dishwasher. And when we had kids, I was like, they are not going to grow up to be like you in that respect.
Yeah. Well, you know, the whole goal is raising an independent young man, right? Since we're talking about boys, raising independent children, young adults. And it doesn't start when they're 16 or 18. It starts when you, as the parent, are ready to step back and say, oh, I see that you're capable of doing this. I have a mom that's one of my clients, and she's, you know, she's got 2 boys and she's doing all the laundry and the laundry and the laundry. And it's like, well, aren't they helping you do the laundry? And no, because it's just a hassle, right? It's easier to do it herself. But she decided, oh, they can help put things away. So she did the folding and she had all the, you know, clothes out on the bed, and they were so excited to put their clothes away. And the older one was helping the younger one hang up. She said, I don't think my 7-year-old has ever hung anything on a hanger. So the 9-year-old was like, oh, hey, I'll help you hang your sweatshirts on the hanger. And so this sense of service, this sense of capability arises naturally. You know, if she would have said, go show your brother how to hang that sweatshirt up on the hanger, that would have been just from the outside. But this came naturally in the course of taking care of the home, which is what we want our kids to grow up to be able to do.
Yes, right? I love that. I feel like I need to say Tyler does the dishes great now. He's they can learn when they're older. It's just harder. Yes.
Well, and because I do have a boy and a girl, I'm very conscious to teach them both these same skills. And that's really only come up since they are only 6.5 and 5. That's really only come up in the last, I'd say, 6 months or so. Mostly born out of the fact that we've been home for so long doing the same things. And I will admit, I snapped and I was like, why am I the only one who cleans everything in this house? And that's when it like all clicked. You know what? You're old enough. You can start doing this stuff. And the hardest part is letting them do it and to be okay with how it's done in the end product, because it's all about the process and learning. It's not about like the perfect end result. So, but it is, we're getting there.
Yeah. And it does take patience and it does take time. And can you do it every single day? No. Sometimes you're just going to whip those dishes in the dishwasher and just to be done with it. But it's really important to take that time and instill the habit.
Definitely. In them. Yeah. And that's my goal, is to make more of that happen this summer before the screen time happens. So they're not going to like
it. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Summer schedule. Yeah. It's coming in hot.
Well, I always talk about non-negotiables before screen time, that you choose some non-negotiables as a family and you have them participate in what those non-negotiables are. And that's, you know, if it's exercise or practice your instrument or reading time or family time, whatever you decide it is, those things happen before screen.
I love it. Yeah, we've been talking a lot about this is, we're in a family and this is what you do. And this is forced family fun in Tuba.
And you will have fun.
And they always do. They always end up having fun. So speaking of this last year and all of its ups and downs, it has brought out big emotions in all of us. How have you seen the pandemic affect boys and how can we support them in this?
I have seen, I mean, it breaks my heart for all of us, you know, for our kids. Boys especially have struggled, I believe, because, and I mean, that's not to say the girls haven't struggled too, but the schooling online, having a preschooler have to sit on a Zoom call, expecting a first grader to be able to pay attention for more than 3 minutes with the Zoom call, it's really just been impossible. We have asked our children to do the impossible. We as adults can't do what we've asked our children to do. And so there, you know, there's conversation around, oh, you know, well, he has to do it because I don't want him to be behind. And I really, truly, and I'm an educator, and I truly believe that there is no behind. You just got to put that notion away. You are where you are. Your kids are where they are. There's, you know, we sure will have, you know, the years ahead will unfold. I'm going to guess once, and I've seen it as my clients' kids have gone back to school, all of the problematic behaviors suddenly have disappeared, suddenly gone. He's happy again. He's not depressed. He's not locked in his room. He's, you know, coming down for family dinners. He's playing with his friends in real life. And so this, it's just been a 180 switch to see, and we know how much our kids have missed out on. And so recognizing that they will get out of this slump, it will be, you know, I believe that they're going to go back and the learning is going to be happening more readily because they're happy again. And so mental health is the priority, the only priority. Math, reading, science, any of it is not important right now. Your child, if he is stressed, if he is unhappy, if he's depressed, if he's anxious, he can't learn anyway. So you need to pay attention to that layer. And I really believe firmly that nature is the antidote to everything. And getting your kids outside, getting, you know, sunshine on their faces and the wind in their hair is going to help that mental health aspect. And then they will be ready to learn and they will find their passion and that thing that lights them up. And, you know, we know that our boys have been inundated, spending way, 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 way more time than we ever thought possible on video games. And, you know, it's uncomfortable. We're not happy about that. We don't love it, but it is what is. It was what was. And I believe that it's going to shift and they will come out of their, you know, their bubble of that. They may still be compelled to play, sure. But all of a sudden, there's all the other things to do again. And so really, and if you have to, if he's not coming out of his room, if you have to make exercise, fresh air, outside time non-negotiable before screen time, then do it. And have parental controls and be able to turn off the devices. You have to have that control if it's become problematic in your house.
Yeah, so my oldest is 9 and we still have pretty strict parameters about playing and, you know, all the parental controls and everything, but I could see it for him becoming problematic as he gets older, if he can take it in his room or if we ever have a TV in there or whatever. But I like the non-negotiable of exercise before screens. That's going to be on our summer list, I think.
Good. Yay.
Okay, so this is a topic Brittany and I have talked about multiple times. So as the mother of white boys, we recognize the privilege that we inherently carry through no choice of our own, through really just, it is
the fate exactly. of birth, right?
So I find myself struggling between making them aware of their privilege but also not using it as a way to hold them down. I want to continue to encourage my son to achieve and take advantage of all the things that he has access to. But I also want him to be, it's a very fine line to walk.
It is. I think it comes down to, there is an age appropriate conversation to have here, absolutely. And we do want to talk about social justice and we do want to talk about economic disparity with our kids and have them be aware of it. But again, it's like you cannot be a sledgehammer about it either. And it's looking for the teachable moments. I believe that part of it is that piece of being of service, being kind. All the values that we are trying to instill in our children, whatever color they are. And then depending on, you know, what your community looks like, are your kids surrounded by white kids or are they, you know, do they have kids of color in their class and talking about it, you know, you just have to have the conversations. And it's hard because we don't know how to have the conversations. We didn't grow up having those conversations. I never heard of hashtag white privilege, but here we are. And so we have to look around and maybe there's a news story that would be appropriate to share with your 10-year-old or something comes up that you can look at that way. And of course, you know, we want every child to thrive. We want every child to have the privilege and the opportunities. And so I don't see it as a place of, I need to hold my son back, but it is a place of having a social awareness. And that comes slowly. It comes over time. You know, it comes with maturity and experience. And part of that is getting them out of their, you know, if they're in their white bubble, getting them out of their white bubble. And I believe travel is, you know, one of the ways to do that. And being of service is another way to do that. So you have to evaluate that for your family and, you know, what you value in your family.
Well, like you said, the fact that this is even on our radar, it's a conversation that we're having. I know my parents never talked about anything like that and their parents didn't. So I think the fact that this is, you know, my son's only 5, but I think the fact that I'm looking towards that, obviously it, when he's older, to have these conversations, but to be aware of it, I think is just the first step.
Yeah. That we're thinking about it, that we're watching for opportunities to talk about it and not shutting it down. And I think this goes for the you know, birds and bees conversations too. Like, you are going to have, as a parent, you are going to have, hopefully, you're going to have a ton of little conversations throughout their growing up years that are going to be awkward and uncomfortable and embarrassing. And the more you can just call it that and just be like, yeah, this is really, I really don't want to talk to you about masturbation, but we're going to talk about it. And it's awkward. And not yet, Heather, you're good for a few more years. You're good. But, and it's that place of, you want to be the expert for your child. You don't want the kid on the playground to be the expert. You don't want the internet to be teaching your child about healthy relationships and human sexuality. So guess what, moms and dads listening, you get to be that person. And there are many experts out there that can guide you. A really good resource that I love is Amy Lang of Birds and Bees and Kids. And you guys should have her on the show. She's awesome. And she's my go-to. She's my go-to sex expert. And she talks about, you know, what's age appropriate for kids and what they need to know by when. And she's just a treasure of information. Yeah. And I think this is a good point too, of just as a parent, and this circles back to everything we've talked about with boys and their emotions, is getting curious, staying in the place of curiosity with your kids, of, you know, well, what do you think about that? And what's going on here? And you might be so surprised at what the answers are when you give it the space, when you ask that one question, not the 5, when you give the pause, when you have the silence, when you're out for a walk, when you're laying in bed and it's dark and you don't have to make eye contact, that's when your children will tell you. They are so wise, and we just forget to listen sometimes. Or we presume that we think we know what's going on, when it might be something completely different.
Oh, wow. I could just chat with you all night.
Oh, okay. Let's do it. Let's pull an all-nighter, ladies.
Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your breakthrough sessions podcast and your new project?
Oh, yes. Well, our podcast, I'm a co-host with a mom of 4 boys. And so we have great fun over there. We're in our 3rd year and it's called On Boys, and you can find it anywhere you find podcasts. And I am Boys Alive. That is my business. And you can find me at boysalive.com. My newest project is called the Boy Talk Blueprint: How to Have Great Conversations with Your Son. And this is some of the things that we've been talking about tonight. So this is a step-by-step guide for how to have those great conversations that we long to have. We want to have those deep, meaningful conversations with our boys, but we've got to know how to set the stage. We've got to know, you know, when he's four, it's going to look a lot different when he's 14, knowing the words to choose, how to ask skillful questions. All these things are packed into the Boy Talk Blueprint. And you can find that if you just go to my website, boysalive.com, and click on the yellow bar, it will take you to the Boy Talk Blueprint, where everything is described in delicious detail for you because a woman wrote it.
I love it.
There might be some bullet points there too, I will say, but it's $37. It is a treasure trove. It's absolutely packed with new information, strategies to be that boy-friendly parent so that you can create the space to have those boy-friendly great conversations.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Janet. You've given me so much to think about, and I'm going to think about it all silently by myself and not say anything out loud.
Okay. Good luck with that, Heather. Thank you so much. This has been really fun. And I hope that, you know, even if you just have one takeaway from this whole conversation, that it shifts and changes your expectation and your connection, because it's just all about connecting with another person in the way that they are most comfortable with. And that's boy-friendly way.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
If you like what you just heard, and we hope you do, you can find more of us online at www.okayestmoms.com. We're also on all social media platforms, Pinterest, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at Okayest Moms Blog. Or if you want to, you can send us an email at hey@okayestmoms.com.